we're rolling into part two here, which is the process. So we're going to be focusing more on, you know, your time in HU and like your work on this solo stuff and what you were working on the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll turn it back over to Vic for leading this one off.
So years following the band's debut on MySpace is pretty well documented. But as we're looking over to your solo side of your work, you previously mentioned that some of your stuff was started and restarted several times. So it sounds like some of your solo material was there for a while. So could you explain how did you juggle working on your own music and handling your work with HU over these years?
Mm-hmm. Ever since I got my own studio set up, I've just, that's like my favorite thing to do is just go in the studio and record songs. Like whatever comes to mind, I record. A lot of it sounds nothing like Hollywood Undead. A lot of it sounds like the shittiest song you've ever heard. And some of it's good. So anytime I have a song that sounds like it could be a Hollywood Undead song, I show it to the fellas. If they like it, we use it. And a lot of it too, I'm writing for myself, but I'm like, no, this is way too much like a Hollywood Dead song. Like, one for instance is Whatever It Takes. I had that beat forever. Like that was going to be a solo project beat or a beat I gave to someone else or who knows. And then eventually a couple of the guys in the band loved the beat. So I was like, okay, anything that you guys like, 100% Hollywood Undead is my number one focus. So that kind of thing happened a lot. And then I was just building like this whole bank of songs. And then when the pandemic hit, I actually had an opportunity to go and work on these songs and finish them because I have so many. So I kind of went through and just any songs that I still loved, I would go in and finish or just write new ones from scratch. That kind of gave me the time and the opportunity to finally do a solo record, which I have been talking about and thinking about doing forever.
So when you were doing that, like personal recording almost as like a release sometimes, like, did you always plan to be releasing something or was it really more of a like, I got to get this off my chest, I got to flex that creative muscle?
It's definitely both because there are some songs. I mean, for the most part, I want people to hear my music, you know, and I do have that in the back of my mind the entire time. But there are some, I mean, a few that I wouldn't show anyone. And they're probably not that good too. That was like an exercise I used to do. If I had writer's block, I would write. I was like, I'll go in and no matter what, finish a song and I will not show it to a single soul. So it could suck. It could be shitty. I could be off key. The song could be terrible, cheesy ass lyrics. Doesn't matter. I'm going to record a song for myself and I'm going to only listen to it in my car when I'm by myself. So I did that and then wrote a song that I was like, you know what? This song's fucking pretty good. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do that from now on. Whenever I'm writing a song, just kind of go into it with that freedom, like without overthinking it. I think that's what a lot of artists' biggest problem is, especially after they get a little success, is just overthinking things and not going based off of feeling and fun. They go based off of, oh, I had success, so let me follow that same formula now. So you're just following a formula of trying to be successful without you're forgetting to have fun.
So you mentioned COVID is finally like giving you a chance to polish stuff up and formalize it for release. Were there any other near misses, you know, where you had mentioned you'd started stuff and restarted stuff? Like, was there another time in the past where you got close to releasing something and then for one reason or another, you called it off?
There was after what fucking record was it? What record was Another Way Out on?
Notes.
Okay. So after Notes, as soon as we were done with the record, I went in with Griffin. I was like, hey, dude, I want to do a fucking solo project. let's write songs. Let's write 5 songs and release them. He was like, fuck yeah, I'm down. So we wrote 5 songs. In that batch actually was Lil Tim McGraw. And I was going to release it. And then there was just some weirdness around the whole thing. And some of the songs weren't great. Some of them are still good too. Like, I don't know, maybe one day I'll release those too. Cause in that batch and that writing period of time, for me at least, like I was in a different zone than I'm in now. And I think it's a good zone, but it's different. So I think it might be cool to like go back to some of those songs. But yeah, that I guess that's the closest I got to releasing shit. It just didn't happen because it's like, how would I tour on something? It's like, I'm going on tour with Hollywood Undead. My focus is that. Do I really want to do a fucking solo project? What kind of ego fucking maniac am I? It's like, what's the point? I don't know. So I would go back and forth and have these fucking thoughts and arguments with myself of what the fuck am I even doing? So yeah, I put it aside. I was, and at that point I was like, you know what, maybe these songs that I'm writing aren't for me. Maybe I'll be a producer. Maybe I'll be a songwriter. I'll give these songs to other people. I'll produce bands and kind of have a bank to give or to let bands choose from. So I just kind of didn't know what I wanted to do. Do I want to be a producer? Do I want to give these songs away? Do I want to release these songs myself? And this was all the way from Notes from the Underground, or before that, all the way up until about 6 months ago, to where I finally showed enough people, like management, our booking agent, Michael Arfin, old managers of mine. I showed them music and I got advice from everyone. Should I be a producer? Should I give these songs away? Should I release them on my own? And everyone basically said, you should just release them on your own. Put them online. Fuck it. Who gives a shit? So that was like 5 months ago, probably, that I finally made the decision. Okay, I'm going to release a solo project. I'm going to get 10 definite songs that I think are solid as fuck and release a solo record. Crazy shit, huh?
That's crazy.
Quick turnaround, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of older management, shout out to Roy. He's a great guy.
Yeah. Roy, he's great. My favorite thing that he did was the Bullet lyric video.
Yeah, that's a great one.
So good. I needed a lyric video for Lil Tim McGraw as the first thing I needed as far as content. So I hit him up, said, hey, do you know anyone who could make me a lyric video? And he sent the emoji with the hand raised. I was like, well, you're out of my fucking price range, bro. I'm paying for this shit out of my pocket. And he said, okay, we can work something out. So that was cool. So we shot that music video and the lyric video. We did a photo shoot and he did some artwork. Like he did the Charlie Sheen hat. He came up with that logo. Yeah, that's all Roy.
Like the trucker hat style swipe.
Yeah, yeah. Which I just got today too, but I didn't want to wear it on the interview. Asshole.
Okay, so how's the writing process dynamic or different when you're writing for yourself or putting together a song with bandmates?
Well, the cool thing with writing by myself is just I have complete freedom to do whatever I want. Like who knows what the Charlie Sheen side project was going to sound like. I don't know if it was going to be straight hip hop where I'm rapping the whole time, or straight rock or country, or who fucking knows. With Hollywood Undead, there has to be, I mean, we do have a lot of freedom in the band that we've built over time, you know, with songs like Bullet and Another Way Out and stuff. Like at first, some guys in the band were like, how is that a Hollywood Undead song? But the cool thing is, no one knows what a fucking Hollywood Undead song sounds like. I think the only way to describe it is every song has to have some kind of grit to it, or some kind of just some kind of dirt on it or something. They can't be squeaky clean. It's got to have some kind of spin on it. But other than that, we pretty much have freedom. But I guess my solo project was just, it doesn't have to have that. It could be fucking anything. So, yeah.
So going into like you know, Hollywood Undead and writing and everything, there's been some conversations in the last couple of years about lyrical content and how, you know, maybe some phrases or words don't exactly hold up to the test of time, if we want to put it gingerly. So, but, you know, the band's also historically been anti-censorship, and that also contributed to a lot of issues with you and your bandmates getting that first album out. I know some members put out like a press release or something a couple of years ago, like saying, hey, we regret, you know, some moments in our discography, right? It seems like as a group collectively, like as a band, you guys have been pretty cancel proof. No one's tried to like come at you on social media with pitchforks and torches yet. What are your thoughts on like how those moments in the discography sit today and like how you might be writing differently in 2021 versus like 2005, right?
Totally. Yeah, back then we just didn't think about it. You know, if we were to say something that's derogatory, like a derogatory word, it wasn't used back then in a way that aimed it at that group of people. You know what I mean? If someone were to say the F word and not fuck the other one, we would never say that towards someone who was gay, you know? So we weren't using it in that way, but we were just being highly insensitive. So we regret the shit out of that. Like we never would want to offend or hurt anyone's feelings in any way. It's just, yeah, it was just that was the times back then, I guess. Like yeah. it was movies and shit. It wasn't like Seth Rogen movies. They said it to each other. And what's the one with Jonah Hill?
Seth Rogen. They were in Superbad together.
Yeah, they see the shit in that. You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. But nowadays, when we do the re-releases, we're going to change those words. You know, we ain't trying to hurt anyone or offend anyone. So if we do the re-releases, we're taking all those words out.
Obviously a song like Dead in Ditches would not happen. that whole song would have to just be binned at that point, right?
It'd be an instrumental.
Okay, so in your last interview with us, my favorite quote was, any song could be Hall of the Dead song, like you previously said before. So yeah. As you started writing your own material, how did you decide, like, this is straightly Charlie Sheen song, or this is better suits as an Ed Sheeran song?
It's hard too, because when I do look at the solo record, a lot of the shit could work for Hollywood Undead too, you know, because anything could work for Hollywood Undead. But I was just like tired of talking about releasing a solo thing or making a move on that end. I was like, okay, I'm going to take what I have and compress it down to 10 songs and release them. And after that's done, any new idea I have, any effort I have creatively is going back in Hollywood Undead. Like when we started this recording process, before that. So let's say like a year when the pandemic started and I was like, okay, I'm doing a solo project. I was completely focused on that, and any idea I had, probably overthinking it a lot too. But any idea I had, I would try to make it into something cool. Any thought I had, any feeling, what I was going through at the time, shit I went through in the past, all that stuff. I was like, I'm putting this into a solo project that basically is a representation of exactly what I'm going through and what I've been through. This is a representation of me as a person and as a human being, it's just a peek into my soul, basically. Which you can do when you're in a band that's with a group of people, you know, but it's kind of hard. Maybe I have one verse to tell you like what's going on in my life or some real deep shit like that's going on with me or part of me. I have one verse to do it in a song and then other guys do their parts, blah, blah, blah. It's like, now I have an opportunity to do every verse and every chorus and every lyric is all from me. And it just felt so good to be able to do that, to just talk about what's going on, what happened. And it was just, it was therapeutic, and it was, man, it was great. I'm glad it happened, and I'm stoked as fuck for people to hear all the songs.
No, we're excited. And I think there is a general excitement in the community right now, because, you know, every track that comes out is slightly different. Yeah. You know, we'll see what happens once that full like 10 or 11 tracks actually drops. I'm sure there's some surprises hidden in there.
For sure.
So, you know, we're still in that phase of the interview where we're talking about like that time period where HU was your big focus. But Han Solo, taking a detour to Leo's, spun up during a heavily focused HU time in your career. Can you talk a little bit about, maybe for, you know, viewers that don't know, what Han Solo was and what it meant for you, and kind of give some of the backstory there?
Yeah. So, yeah, because I started off in cover bands and I was perfectly content with being a cover band guy for the rest of my life. When I'm like on tour, I can't, like, I'm excited to get home and play the cover band shows, because it's all of my friends and family, and it's at bars where I'm friends with the owners, and I used to go there. I go there when I'm not on tour and drink or see bands. So I love that. And also, another thing I love about it is the fact that in Hollywood Undead, there's so many moving parts and so many people involved, and all fucking drama and money and all this fucking weird shit. I love the fact that I could go to a bar and there's no fucking drama. There's no one except for me and the other guys in the band, three dudes who don't give a shit. We're each getting $100 a night and free alcohol, and we're having fun. Like, that's like, it's like a dream to me. Like, it's so much fun. I have a lot of fun doing that. That's why I do it. I don't do it anymore just because I'm in Nashville. I'll have to put an outfit together out here, a couple fellers. I'm sure there's plenty.
So on this Han Solo tangent, you got to work with Dave Rios and Ryan Silverberg again on the Unhinged stream that you guys put on a few months ago. What was the process like, you know, getting them involved with the stream, and how you were reorganizing some of the songs for that performance?
When we were talking about doing the live stream, I was like, or everyone was like, hey, let's make this shit cool. We love like the Unplugged stuff with Nirvana and Alice in Chains. So we're like, let's do an acoustic thing. Let's do a couple covers. Let's do no tracks. Let's do full on band with an orchestra. So in order to make it a wall of sound like we like, we needed more musicians. So the two best musicians I knew, who I met through Han Solo, were Dave Rios, is the best guitar player I've ever met, and Ryan Silverberg's the best pianist I've ever met in my entire life. That guy's fucking insanely good. So I hit them up, told them what was going on. They were down. And yeah, it was so cool to be on the stage with them, because Dave always asked me, like, hey, Jordan, let me in Hollywood Undead, fool. I'll get tattoos, fool. I'm like, hey, bro, nah. But for one night, he got to be in Hollywood Undead, so he was stoked.
You
got to
get some of that Downey rep, like, across the country.
Yeah.
So you just, like, you know, we're kind of joking about getting another outfit together and stuff, but you think you'll ever, you know, Dave started playing live shows at bars and stuff again, according to social media. So you think you'll ever make your way back to LA for one special night and get together with the boys and do something silly?
Yeah. We've talked about it. Just every time I'm there for like 4 days or something. So it's hard because I have so much shit going on. But if I'm ever there for a long period of time, 100%, I would love to play, especially Crow's Nest. They were so good to us. And that's a bar that's still standing there. Yeah, if I'm ever in town, I would love to play there again and get the band back together.
So switching back over to the production side of things, there was another interview with another member of HU some while back that they said, like, oh, you're in Nashville working production with some country artist or something. But you've also done production work on HU. And I'm assuming there's probably some of your at least initial production work on this solo record. Do you see yourself moving more into that role as time goes on, be it for your own material, HU, or even external artists like you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, 100%. I'd love to do that because, I like to me that's fun as fuck. Like for some reason, like I look at music and I think a lot of people do like kind of as a puzzle. Like I love figuring things out and I love writing music. I love touching on other genres because the genre of Hollywood Undead, I kind of beat the hell out of sometimes. So it's nice to step out of that for a little bit and work on someone else's stuff. It gives me a lot of freedom and it's a lot of fun for me. I would love to do it. I would love to do that. I'd love to be a producer, but also I wouldn't want to only do that. You know, every producer I know is fucking miserable for the most part or a fucking weirdo. Like, I think being in a room with no windows 6 days a week isn't healthy. But yeah, I would love to work with artists that I like and continue to do that. Like the stuff, like working with Zero was great. I worked with Ice9 on that song, the Ex Mortis song. I like had so much fun. Like that shit is so rewarding to me. Hey, I'm gonna smoke. So if I get trippy, dude, my bad.
No, you're good.
Okay.
We've made it through the lion's share of stuff, so
Okay.
you
Cool.
can
Cool.
you won't get too faded, hopefully.
That'll be cool.
So there's probably dozens, if not hundreds, of songs that never get far enough or just aren't considered good enough to get released. A big set for us personally, with the website and everything, is something we've come to refer to as the Xmas EP. It was the first thing we did with SCNFDM. It was some Day of the Dead B-sides that you guys were trying to get Interscope to let you drop for free or as an EP or something. It was Lovesick Radio, Make Money, Take Money, and So Dead and Gone, I think, are the names that have leaked in databases over the years.
Those were never released.
No. So, I mean, we got a couple follow-up questions like building off of that, I guess. So, like, what's it feel like as an artist to maybe dump dozens of hours into something and then for it to just get confined for one reason or another and never actually see the light of day?
I think for the most part, especially those songs you just listed, that happened for a reason because some of those are whack. What was I Make Money, Take Money? That, yeah, that shit was whack. What was the other one?
So Dead and Gone was one of
I don't
them.
remember that one.
And then Lovesick Radio.
Yeah, that was kind of whack too. See, yeah. So, I mean, some of them for sure, it's for the better. A lot of those songs where it's like these are the songs that didn't make the album, but let's do something with them. They'll find a home somewhere.
Right.
But it's like those songs that don't make the record, it happens every time. Like you might be stoked on them at the time, they don't make the record, and then you kind of realize later, like, yeah, that should happen for a reason.
Yeah, you guys have always been very forward facing music wise,
Yeah,
like
for sure.
to a T. I would get harpooned probably by the community if I didn't at least ask, are those songs literally so dead and gone? Is it an Interscope thing at this point? Like, could they ever see the light of day?
Those ones? No, I don't think so. I don't even think anyone fucking knows how to get them. I don't even know where they are. I might be able to find them in my email, but it's like an MP3. I think I don't even know who produced those songs. We'd have to find the producer. We'd have to go get the mix because they're probably not mixed, then mastered. There's like a lot of work to do, and then the songs are kind of whatever.
Yeah.
If I find them, send me a message, and if I find them, I'll send them to you, and you can be the judge. If you
Okay.
love them, then I'll go get them mixed and mastered, and I'll release
Hey.
Vic's awake.
I just always has a place in my heart for all of the issue demos.
Okay. Oh, cool. Okay.
Because
Yeah.
do you know that the Street Dreams demos has been in the internet for a while?
That song's good. I can't believe that song. It was never released, right?
Yeah, it was
iTunes. Oh,
iTunes
yeah.
track, but there is a Street Dreams demo with Na 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 Chance.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It's like high pitched.
Yeah,
There, there's a couple, there's like two or three. There's one that's pitched up like that, and there's one that's just, it's either you or a couple of the guys doing like gang vocals in the background without a pitch shift.
I think the high pitch one bugged the shit out of all of us or some of us. So yeah, we probably tried to fix them, and then I don't know. I remember someone hating the fucking na-na-na's. It might have been Jonathan Three Tears, but I'm gonna have to agree.
And also, coming in hot demo is also outside too.
Yeah, the wrong verse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a Star Wars reference.
Yeah, that was like a label fuck up. They put the wrong version on YouTube, and I heard it, or someone heard it, and we're like, hey, that's the wrong fuck. That was my first verse that I wasn't happy with. So I did a new verse, and they were supposed to release that version, but they put the wrong fucking version up for an hour, and then it was too late by that point.
They had
hold of it.
Yeah, Vic and our boy Hood as Fuck back in the day, if people remember him from Tumblr. I think the label did the same thing the following record for Dead Bite. They dropped a demo for like the first half a day or something and then fixed it.
God.
They're not around anymore though.
yeah. Good. That shit sucks, man. It seems like that shit happens all the time. Sometimes they've released masters that are so fucking quiet. We're like, what the fuck? I thought you guys were a huge label. Like, get your shit together.
Yeah, this happened with Already Dead.
Yeah.
They put a mastered version.
Yeah, it's all quiet. It's like, dude, what the fuck?
The mix for the version of Hear Me Now that's on the music video is off as well. Like, it's slightly different than the master.
So crazy, dude.
And I think We All in the Night video mix is also different.
Yeah, makes sense.
But still, it's interesting to hear the demos because it showed us how the process goes.
Oh, okay. Hey, if I find any more demos, I'll send them to you. Is that what you like, Vic? That's what gets you off, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
All right.
Like I said, I have a special place.
Okay. Hey, if I find any lying around, I'll send them to you because what the fuck do I care? Now I'm high. So I'll send you whatever you need. Venmo.
Speaking of unreleased tracks, we recently talked with Johnny about getting a full list of retailer exclusive tracks like Best Buy and iTunes. Some of the songs titles are Street Dreams, I Am, Ghost, and some others. So you guys could work with Interscope, I think, to release them for streaming
in
some days in the future. So.
Yeah,
some of these tracks are just amongst of fan favorite track as fan favorite tracks, and it breaks our hearts that we can't stream on Spotify or anything like that.
Us too. I just brought this up to Drell too. We were talking outside the studio. I think I might have saw it online. It might have been one of you guys or someone listed these songs that aren't on Spotify. And I forgot, like, all those songs are good. And I can't believe those didn't go on the record.
Yeah,
those
we bring up that subject, like, numerous times. And, like, I think maybe 2 or 3 months ago, George asked me to send him the full list.
Yeah. Yep. I was talking to Jarrell about that same thing. I was like, dude, let's fucking re-release them or at least put them on Spotify. Who gives a shit? So I'm glad you reminded me because I'll bring it up again. I'll bring it up to our management and see. We'll see.
I think for a lot of folks, I don't have enough fingers or toes to count how many times I see on Reddit where someone asks, how do I get like New Day, right? Like there's a lot of tracks, like Best Buy doesn't sell CDs anymore. Like iTunes, if a track was locked behind an iTunes pre-order, like the album was for pre-order for like 6 months in 2011 or some shit. Like there's no legal way to get a hold of this material anymore.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's crazy. I guess it's been 10 years too. So I think we own the masters of, I have to talk to my people, but I think after 10 years, you own the masters. So anything that was recorded during the Swan Songs or American Tragedy era, we would own. Now
notes would be coming up soon then.
yeah the others should be coming up. I don't know, every 2 years is a new batch of them, so I guess maybe once we own those then we'll put them on Spotify. I don't know how.
I think Johnny mentioned in not fast interview that you own the masters now. Not sure if he mentioned just swag songs or American Tragedy 2.
American Tragedy 2. I think that's how we were able or were able to do the re-records because we own the masters. So now we can re-record them. So that's why we can only do those first two records. We can't do like a greatest hits re-release. We can only do greatest hits from album 1 and 2.
So not yet, but someday.
yeah, someday. Someday soon, you know?
So just a few years.
Yep.
So, exactly. I mean, talking about American Tragedy, the last interview we did a few years ago, God, it feels like way longer than that. But, you were surprised that Bullet, took off and became one of the band's top tracks of all time. Cause it was a bit of a curveball, like you said, sound wise and tone wise and subject matter wise. One of the earliest interviews I remember watching of you, years and years ago, it was probably during the Black Swan tour. Someone was asking you guys what the next single was going to be. Was it going to be Everywhere I Go? And you were like, nah, probably not. It's not very radio friendly. It's not very serious. I doubt that'll be a single. And then fast forward a decade plus later, and the song is huge. Like, it's viral on TikTok. It's one of your top stream songs. You close shows out with it. Do you want to reflect, for a moment on the longevity of that track that you were so feeling was a little unassuming back in 2008, and how it feels that it has such a long tail on it lifetime wise?
Yeah, I can't believe it, man. It's so insane to me, because back then, that was probably my favorite song on Swan Songs, because that was my first song that was basically just me, So I loved that song, but there was no radio station that would play that kind of song, like a jokey hip hop song, except for K-Rock played it a few times in LA, which blew my mind, because growing up in LA, K-Rock was the fucking shit. I've been listening to that forever. So it was on that. I recorded it with tape recorder, the first time it was played, my manager told. So I went out with the tape recorder, recorded. I have the thing somewhere on my computer. But that shit blew my mind. So I was like, oh shit, now it's going to take off. Everywhere I go, I'm not going to be able to go to the fucking store anymore without getting recognized. But they played it about 5 times. That was it. And I don't think there was any other stations that played it. Maybe a couple.
Yeah. Kilo played it out here. And one of the DJs actually called you about it 1 year for New Year's.
Oh, so they play it. Did they play it a lot or just a few times?
It was on rotation for a few months, I think, until the next single dropped. They were doing it around when Desperate Measures was on its way out. But it was an ultra clean remix.
It's a rock remix.
It wasn't the Castle Run Older remix. It was a separate radio edit. I can send it to you.
Damn, that's crazy. So it was in rotation out there.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. Well, that's cool. So I guess some people were playing. Is that it's a rock station that was playing it, right?
Yeah. Hard rock station.
Once in a while, they'll play a weird ass fucking song,
Yeah.
It didn't get us new fans, really. Did it?
I mean, maybe now, right? With TikTok and stuff.
Yeah, with TikTok, but it's that song just kind of was a fan favorite. It wasn't a fucking everyone knows the song. You walk down the street and everyone is singing it. It's nah, the shit was still kind of rare that you back then that you even meet someone who's ever heard of Hollywood Undead.